What's up, Pacers fans? I'm Corey Joseph, and here's my favorite Pacers analysis, the Sideline Guys podcast.
There's 8 games remaining in the Pacers season. These all have utmost importance. Indiana is in 4th position, trying to hold off the Boston Celtics. They still got a couple of games against them as well. We welcome you in to a playoff push edition of the Sideline Guys podcast. Alongside Jeremiah Johnson, I'm Pat Boylan, and you come off this 4-game road trip, which this is kind of, you know, what I was saying for a lot of this road trip. If you would have scattered these 4 games around the season, maybe put one in each month, I don't think any of them would have lifted an eyebrow. A lot of them, you're in close games against really good teams on the road that are fighting for playoff position, and you're just not having enough at the end. There's inherent disappointment in going 0-4 in a road trip. I think 1-3 would have felt a lot better. And you come back from this, and for me, I'm looking at this Denver game with a lot of importance because I'm saying you just lost 4 in a row. You've got the number one team in the Western Conference at home, and then you're going on the road to play Oklahoma City, who's going to want some revenge. You're going on the road to play Boston, and this is, you know, going to be difficult to win there. You've got that Boston game coming home. You know, this has the potential to be a game where you can, you know, stymie some of that negative momentum. You can put some in your own direction, or if you have a tough night on Sunday, things potentially could snowball more than you would like. And talk about snowball, that's what the game was, but in favor of Indiana. One of the amazing stats to me, this is already the Pacers' 3rd 35-point win this year, and they've never had a season where they have done that. And you consider 2, maybe all 3 of these games have happened without Victor Oladipo, but you talk about much needed. I mean, to come away not just beating Denver at home. I think you win this game by 2 and you have a lot of confidence. To win it in the way they did, it felt reminiscent of those Lakers and Clippers games, but against one of the elite teams in the NBA.
After the 4-game road trip on that late night flight back from Northern California to Indianapolis, I kind of thought before falling asleep, let's see what this team is made of. And I really didn't know the answer to the question. And I admit having a little bit of doubt on Friday and Saturday and almost worried that maybe the team had run out of gas and that individual players, and we will touch on this shortly, had just kind of reached the end. And not necessarily the end, but they didn't have the same spunk, the same pizzazz, the same swagger that you noticed all season long. And so I did think it was good that there was a travel day, a get your sleep back and on the right time schedule day on Friday. I'm sure a very light practice on Saturday. And then this 5 o'clock start at Bankers Life Fieldhouse with the windows open. And Denver, we should make note of this, at the end of a 4-game road trip and at the end of a stretch where they had won 6 consecutive games. So there were some circumstances favoring the Pacers. But I don't know that I ever said must win. I think that's a little cliche, and sometimes you say it too many times. But that was a game kind of like the Thunder game about a week and a half ago that I thought you had to win. Now, they didn't have the same carryover that I thought they would get after the Thunder win. Some of that was because of the difficult schedule and the road trip. But I just thought they had to kind of show signs of life, signs of their former selves, the team that bounced back from the 4-game losing streak at the end of January, the team that we saw play well without Victor Oladipo in the first half of the season. And you saw that right away. This team got off to a good start. And then, as this happened so many times when they've lost leads, they did not lose leads. And Bojan Bogdanović is kind of the poster child for, does this team have enough energy left, enough to kind of make a little bit of a push into the playoffs and then pass the first round? And he showed he does have some energy left. And I just thought all around it was an outstanding performance. Bojan led the way. It was important, I think, for Miles to get off to a good start offensively. I think he is kind of the X factor moving forward. If he can be a difference maker on the offensive end of the floor, it just opens up everything else for those guys that are trying to get their 3-point opportunities, for the times that Domas is in the game as well. If Miles is hitting from the outside and you have Domas inside, I just think Miles is key, and he made a statement on his birthday. No surprise there to have a good birthday game from Miles Turner, and they just put the Nuggets away. And then I think the best part moving forward, you had a day off and a day off, and then the Nuggets game. And this team is really good when they have at least 2 days between games, and we'll see if they can kind of have a little bit of a carryover from the Denver game in Oklahoma City on Wednesday.
A quick tease looking forward. This is a bit of a special edition of the Sideline Guys podcast. We're going to be joined in a few moments by Max Leinwand, who is the Pacers television producer. He's going to give us his perspective on this team as well as give you some inside look inside the truck, an area where I don't think a lot of people get to see and learn a little bit about that aspect of being a TV producer and what goes on in an NBA TV truck. A couple of things I want to bring up. First of all, the Pacers win this game by 36 points, and it was 40 in the final, like, 15 seconds before, you know, a quick flurry of 4 points for Denver when the Pacers had some of their backups on the floor. This is Indiana's 23rd win as a franchise by 35 points or more, and of all of those games, Denver has the best record of any of those teams. So this really is one of the most impressive regular season performances the Pacers have had in their history, and it comes without Victor Oladipo. And I know there are people out there you know, that say, well, look, what the Pacers are doing is impressive, but no Victor Oladipo, what's the reason, you know, to think that they can make some noise in the playoffs? I would say, look at a game like this, 124-88 over Denver. That Lakers win, of course, maybe that was the precursor to the Lakers falling down, but at that point they weren't there. The Pacers have had some really just dominant performances without their best player on the floor. And I want to look forward at Bojan Bogdanović, because he's now, if you go from the day Victor Oladipo got hurt and you look at Bojan's numbers on down, he's averaging 22, 23 points a game, somewhere in that range. He's shooting about 50% from the field. He's shooting about 40% from three. He's now done this for 2 months. If he had done this in, you know, let's say from mid-October to mid-December, he would absolutely be talked about and probably be selected, if he kept it up for another, you know, half month when the All-Star teams are selected, for an All-Star team. He is absolutely playing like an All-Star, and it's not just for 2 weeks, you know, to try to keep the boat afloat. It has been 2 months. So I would challenge those that when they look at Indiana here going forward, and you say you don't have an All-Star in Victor Oladipo, to say, well, Bojan Bogdanović has certainly played like one as of late and as of the last 2 months. And I think when you're looking at this team, it's important to refocus and realize, look, do you put Bojan Bogdanović at the level of some of these superstars in the NBA? Of course not. But what he's doing for the Pacers is a lot of what a lot of all-star players do on good teams.
And he's also having to take a bigger responsibility from a scoring perspective. And you go back to that Denver game, and I wanted to share something that I noticed the practice after the loss to the Nuggets. So Bojan Bogdanović misses the three-pointer to perhaps give the Pacers what would have given the Pacers the win. Some saw Wesley Matthews as open at the top of the key. At the end of the practice, the day after the loss to the Nuggets in Portland, I watched as Nate McMillan had a conversation with Bojan, and I was curious, while not being a part of the conversation, exactly what message he was trying to get across. And I asked Nate, actually a couple days ago, I said, what did you tell him? Were you okay with his shot? He said, we were okay with the shot, but what I wanted to try to get him to do was to catch the ball going downhill. How many times do you see, with not much time on the clock, an inbounds play? And you even saw it with Jeremy Lamb in Charlotte. You catch the ball and you're kind of going the wrong direction. And Bojan was maybe going right at the out-of-bounds line, but if he catches it where he's going downhill, not only does he have the opportunity to attack the basket, but if he's shooting, he's squared up. Where he was and where he caught it, he was open. He did have a good look, but he was fading away. A fadeaway three is not a high percentage shot. And so I think in that situation, then he said, and plus Wesley was open. So that's what Nate told me. I think it was all about how he came off the screen or how he came to catch that pass, that he wanted Bojan to be going downhill a little bit. And then if he squared to the basket, then out of the corner of his eye, he could see Wesley Matthews perhaps even more open at the top of the key, which would have been even a better look at the three. But I think that, and then right after that, Bojan went to Bill Baino and to Popeye Jones. And I heard both of them giving him some positive reinforcement, saying, on the road, shoot the three, get the win. That was a good shot. No one questioned the shot. Was it the 100% best execution? No. But I think Bojan felt bad about that. And then at halftime, or after, I interviewed him at halftime and then after the game as well, I wanted to ask him what the difference was a little bit from the road trip. Did he feel like he was kind of back to his, you know, his old tricks, doing what we've come to know and expect to see from Bojan in that Denver game compared to the road trip? And I think it reminded me a little bit of that Boston game last year when I interviewed him for the first time after he made that bad pass. You could tell how personal he takes his play with this team, how important it is for him to play well for the team to win. And he said, I played bad on the road trip. Like, he was disappointed about his performance, and he was focused. And then let's go into this. Nate McMillan gave him an out, gave him an opportunity in these final 8-9 games to perhaps rest a little bit, and he doesn't want to do that. And I think that Bojan Bogdanović is, it's crazy to say this after, you know, hearing him, actually not hearing much at all from him in his first season with the Pacers, that he kind of is you look at him, he's the poster child for this team right now. He's not only the leading scorer, but he represents that lay it on the line every game. He's played every single game. That desire to win. I'll be disappointed if I lose. I'll feel like I let the team down if I don't do my part. He kind of represents everything that is a Pacer right now.
No, I think that's accurate. And the other point I was going to kind of make was the fact that I don't have this in front of me. I would really like to go back, and I don't know how you define good and where you draw those lines, but when Miles Turner and Domantas Sabonis both have a game where they both play well and you feel like they're playing up to their potential, it seems like this team rarely loses. And when you look at playoff, you know, keys, wherever you know the Pacers are, it seems like there's probably a 95% or better chance that they're going to play Boston in the first round, whether it's a home advantage first round series or whether they open on the road. That to me, I think Bojan's level of play is important because he's kind of stepping up and trying to play the level of your star. And he is right now, but then also how Miles Turner and Domantas Sabonis play. And if they can get both of them playing well, it just seems like there's, when that happens, they're really, really hard to beat because then you've got a center on the floor who is doing all of these different things. We know their skill sets complement each other so well. And it's difficult for other teams when there's that constant all-star-ish level of center on the floor. And I think the Pacers got that about in that Denver game. One thing I wanted to bring up to you was the fact that lately there's been some discussion about resting. And before we get there, when you look at this Boston series, here's how I simplify Indiana's chances. They have two games left against Boston. If they win both of them, they are almost a lock, not a literal lock, but they would be in a just phenomenal position to finish with the four spot. If they lose both of them, it's really going to be an uphill climb to get the four spot. Not undoable. The Pacers are in a better position than Boston is if they were to get swept in the final two, but it would be difficult because you'd lose home court, or you'd lose the tiebreak, I should say, if you lose both of them for sure, and you are two games up. Now you would lose those two games as well. Also of note, and you pointed this out last night in our text chain, if the two teams were to split, Boston's going to have the better conference record, so they're going to lose the tiebreak there. The advantage the Pacers have is if they do split, they still keep that two-game lead with six to go. And a two-game lead with six to go, no guarantee, but they are in a strong position. Of course, rest, and maybe the buzzword now is load management, comes up a lot these days, and it kind of seems like Nate McMillan was considering it. And then maybe Thad Young is, you know, the most to credit for this. In this scenario, when they're going for the four seed right now, as you learned, you know, kind of first in your interview with Nate before the Denver game, that's not something the Pacers are interested in while this four spot is still in play.
I would have never thought that load management would be a consideration for this team with this coaching staff under the circumstances. And then Saturday, we were both working the IHSA boys basketball state final, so we were not actually at practice. But I will admit, in preparing for the game on Sunday, I was surprised to read some of the articles and the tweets of the comments from Nate McMillan saying that he would consider resting some of his guys. And I think he specifically even mentioned the three that had not missed a game this season, Thaddeus Young, Corey Joseph, and Bojan Bogdanović, and saying that he wanted those guys to perhaps get some rest. It sounds to me like, while not knowing the entire timeline of how this transpired, after meeting with the media on Saturday, he had each of those players come into his office and ask them how they were feeling. And in three different conversations, it sounds like Nate got the impression, sorry, I appreciate you considering us and giving us this opportunity to rest, but I'm here to play basketball, and I want to do everything I can. And I think more importantly, I'm okay. I'm not tired. Because, and this is where it's difficult from a coaching staff's perspective, it's kind of like when a player is injured. footballs is known for this. On a Monday or Tuesday, if you go in the locker room and you ask a player, hey, you think you're going to play on Sunday? They're always going to say yes. And sometimes it's no better than 50-50 whether that player is ready to play and the training staff has to make a decision. Thaddeus Young, I respect as much as anybody in the NBA. If he says I'm good enough to play, and if I've had some off games, which I'm not even saying Thaddeus necessarily has. I think the Golden State game, he was the one that maybe was one of the bright spots. But if he says, I don't need the rest, I'll be just as good with rest as without, then you listen to him. Bojan Bogdanović, he never thinks he needs rest. He plays basketball year-round. I think that there is some concern that because he plays year-round, because he won't take games off, because he won't take practices off, he could be tired. And you saw what looked like, to me, a tired Bojan on that road trip. So I think it was important for him to make a statement on Sunday. Corey Joseph, the comments coming from him saying basically, you know, whatever you choose is fine, but I'm good to play. So I asked Nate McMillan about not knowing any of this had happened, just knowing what he had said on Saturday in my pregame interview on Sunday, and it was a completely different answer, the opposite. It's saying, we're going to go for it. Our guys have told me, you know, until the seating is established, they want to play. And if you think about it, that last week there is going to be an opportunity for some rest, perhaps. I mean, you have a game on Sunday at home against Brooklyn and then a game on Wednesday at Atlanta. And unless it's down to exactly, you know, one game difference, maybe you have a week to rest in that point, and then you could go into the playoffs fresh. I do think it's interesting when you consider how many other teams in the NBA are using the load management. The Warriors, it seems like every game somebody else sits. The Celtics have been saying Kyrie Irving is not even going to play every game. If the Celtics lose to the Cavaliers, and you might be listening to this right now after this game has happened, I could see them just completely giving up on the chase for number four and even resting players against the Pacers. I mean, could you see that happening?
Yeah, I mean, Boston's just so tough to predict. And to your point, which is so interesting to me, and I think, you know, we're going to talk with Max here in a little bit and talk a little bit about Coach of the Year with him. I think Mike Malone is certainly in consideration for this. I think he and Nate and Doc and Bud and I'm probably missing one or two guys are probably in that short discussion.
I think that's it, those four, yeah.
Yeah. He even said at the time he's got a half game lead on first that they would rather go in rested and the two seed than play it all out for the one seed. And that's interesting to me because, like, if I'm Denver, I'm thinking as Denver, the comp is the Pacers a few years back when LeBron was in Miami and that team is the Warriors. And I remember as just a fan then, that happened right before I got here, thinking everything you can to get the one seed because home court is so important in the playoffs. And so I was a little surprised to hear him say that. A little surprised to hear Kyrie say what he did, although nothing really that Kyrie says should surprise you anymore. And so knowing Nate to the level of where I feel like I know Nate, which is by no means personally or anything, but as somebody who has the great fortune of being around one of the better basketball minds on this planet pretty regularly during the season, here's what I think was Nate's philosophy. I don't think he wanted to rest. Nate's kind of old school. You know, Nate was a point guard and a hard-nosed point guard, and I would bet if you look back at his numbers, rarely was he resting, if at all. However, I do think he kind of said, you know, we haven't had this discussion yet, so I want to leave the door open. If I'm talking to my guys and they're dead tired and maybe that's something as Nate has evolved as a coach, he says, you know, I'm not going to slam the door shut on that. I'm going to get some opinion from my guys. My guess is if you would have said, Nate, make the call, he'd say no rest. But I do think that's a move from a coach to where he's saying, I'm going to take the pulse of my guys. I'm going to figure out. We're going to discuss this. And if guys are just dead tired, then maybe we figure out a day to get this done. And if you remember, to finish the comp here, the Pacers actually did do that in the 2013-2014 season. They had a game in Milwaukee, I think, where they didn't even send the starting five. So maybe there is, you know, even in that year where they were going for the one seed, some validity to that. But knowing Nate, I think this is what he wanted all along anyway. And so I think for him, it was probably good to get that reassurance from his players that that's what they want too.
And it could even be a little bit of a coaching strategy, because if you give these guys the opportunity, they say, no, I'm good to play, then you can follow up and say, well, show me you're not tired, because you kind of looked tired last week on that four-game road trip. And, you know, whether it's the 3 and 4 nights and just the good competition. I just think this team doesn't have the margin for error that it once had. So you have to have everything at your advantage, and you have to be at full strength. So it'll be interesting to follow it this week because the schedule starting on Wednesday is another 3-4 against potentially three playoff teams. Now all of a sudden Orlando, by the time you play the Magic, they could be a playoff team. And then you've got Detroit. Detroit, they're basically a playoff team. This schedule is setting up to where Orlando is playing so well, you're going to have, I think, 14 of the final 15 maybe against teams in the playoff picture. That's incredible.
Yeah, and the thing I'll say as we wrap here, because Max is patiently waiting his appearance, his first on the Sideline Guys podcast, I don't want to say that the Pacers' chances at four come down to this game against Oklahoma City and what Boston does against Cleveland, because I think that would be inaccurate and it would be placing too much importance on one game. But I do think if the Pacers can get the same result as Boston on Wednesday, which will be tough. The Pacers have a much tougher game. They're at Oklahoma City.
Win-win or loss-loss, saying.
Oklahoma City's really struggling right now. They're coming off that loss. I mean, this is going to be, to me, an emotional, like, what are we made of game for the Thunder, and that's not where the Pacers are. So I do think this is going to be tough. But if you can get there, if you can get past this Wednesday and still have a two-game leg up, and then you're able to split against Boston, then you look at it and you say there's only five other games. Boston's got to make up two of those five. And if you look at Boston's schedule and you look at Indiana's schedule over the final six, they're eerily similar. Like, Boston has a home-and-home with Miami, and the Pacers have a home-and-home with Detroit. So you're talking about two teams that are, you know, dangerous, not top of the East, but fighting for playoff positioning, and from a Miami's case, the playoffs. They both end on the road against a team that's out of the playoffs, Atlanta and Washington. Atlanta is the Pacers. So I'm not saying if they lose to Oklahoma City, and maybe, again, you're listening to this after these results, if they lose to Oklahoma City and if Boston beats Cleveland, I still like the position you're in if you're Indiana. But if you can just somehow get through Wednesday's game on the same result, then I think Boston has lost the best bullet in their chamber, if you will, besides the opportunity to play Indiana. And again, if one of the two teams wins both of those games, advantage that team. But if you can split them, the Pacers are advantaged by status quo, especially as the games roll down here.
In that Boston game, if there was going to be another rest situation, you could almost say rest against Oklahoma City and have a week off to prepare for that Boston game. But I think we're past that point now. There will not be any rest, so we don't even need to spend any more time talking about it. Go out there, play as hard as you can, see what happens. The Thunder are going to be angry. I'm just not sure that an angry Thunder team, and I could be proven wrong in about 36 hours, does it matter? Is it good for Russell Westbrook to be angry and shoot 30 shots? And Paul George played great here at Bankers Life Fieldhouse, but his percentages since the All-Star break are down significantly. You're not hearing the MVP discussion. It's a fascinating week, and I do want to say one final thing before we bring Max in, and I think for everyone that's listening, pat yourself on the back, give yourself a high five your Pacer fan friend. The reason that this 4-5 is important is because of what Bankers Life Fieldhouse has become and what you saw on Sunday afternoon/evening. This is a true home court advantage. This team goes into games at home thinking they can beat no matter who they are playing, even without Victor Oladipo. And if you start that playoff series, even if it's against Boston, a team many projected to win the Eastern Conference when the season started, that has All-Star on one end, and All-Star and Kyrie Irving go down the line. If you start that series at home, you can get some positive momentum, and if it goes to seven, you can play it at home. I just like this team's chances. That is why this team's going for the four spot.
All right, so let's take a quick break, and when we return, we will bring on Pacers television producer Max Leinwand. And we're joined now by a guy that we've been trying to get on for a couple of years. I don't know whether your schedule is just so full or whether you're just so busy and important that it's taken, I guess, late into year four, right, to get you on. But Max Leinwand, who is Pacers producer, welcome.
Do we have laugh track?
I'll try. I'll see if I can get some in there.
That invite must have gotten lost in my spam folder or something like that.
Well, welcome. I want to get into a couple of topics, especially with some things that are pertinent to last night and pertinent to the broadcast. This is year four for you with the Pacers. Pacers, but also you have a pretty extensive career with the Cardinals and with Fox Sports Midwest. And if I were to go through all of those, I would make you sound about 50 years old. But the reality
is how I look, not how I sound.
The reality is, though, you got started doing pretty high-level TV at a pretty young age. Can you kind of take us through quickly kind of your career and how you ended up with the Pacers and what it's been like to watch these 4 years go by?
Yeah, I started as an intern at Fox Sports Midwest, fresh out of college. Left for a year to go get that first job at a country music station down in Farmington, Missouri, KTJJ, J98, The Boot, where I thought I was going to be the next Pat Boylan or Jeremiah Johnson. Turned out, as you can tell by this first answer, that I'm terrible on air. But then got a job back at Fox Midwest as an editor, and then worked my way up doing field production, studio production, started producing live events, and then I was in management. And in management, I realized I don't want to be in management. I want to get back in the trucks. That's where my lifeblood is. And the Pacers job happened to open, and I applied for it, and lucky for me, I got it.
When the job came open, I know you were a lifelong NBA fan. Of course, grew up pulling for the Knicks. But did you just think, this is an opportunity to cover a team and be with the team, and you just kind of jumped to that opportunity?
You know, when I was debating whether or not to take the job after it was offered to me, a friend of mine said to me, you know, when we first met, we were talking about what our dream jobs were, and you said your dream job is to produce the NBA. Dummy, go produce the NBA. And that really, really stuck with me.
We could have an entire podcast, and I know we've been trying to, as Pat said, with Matt on, with Max on his background here.
I've worked with you for 4 years. It's fine.
But I wanted to get your thoughts on this team. The Pacers, you know, as they are with 8 games left in this regular season, fighting for a home court advantage spot in the first round of the playoffs, what has been the biggest surprise, and where do you think they are right now with 8 games to play?
Well, I'll give you the TV producer perspective of it, which is, we, you know, when we go to other cities, other teams come to us, producers always talk, and before Vic got hurt and even after Vic got hurt, other producers would come up to me and say, man, you are lucky to cover this team. They're so much fun to watch. They work really hard. They enjoy this and appreciate it because it's not always this way, and that is the truth. It's been a pleasure to watch and cover this team. The big surprise is obviously how well they played after Vic got hurt. You know, even after that 4-game losing streak, the guys who have stepped up have been absolutely incredible. I keep hearing people say, you know, Nate McMillan, while he's going to be in the conversation for Coach of the Year, he's not going to win because of Budenholzer. I just completely disagree with that. You know, what this team has done to still be a potential top 4 seed while only having Victor Oladipo for 36 games, I mean, that's an insane job of coaching and an insane job of effort by these guys.
Yeah, see, I think to me, from a Coach of the Year perspective, it always seems to go to the best guy or the guy on the best team or something along those lines. But, like, you look at what Nate McMillan, and maybe in the West a good comp is what Doc Rivers has done with that team after losing Tobias Harris. Those seem to me to be the more impressive jobs. Before we get into some of this, I think we hear producer, and a lot of people hear producer, and they understand it's part of a TV broadcast. This is just, of course, an audio platform, so you're going to be missing a lot with this, but what I want to do quickly is I want to play some of the audio of this video, which our pregame show producer Ken shot of the game winner of Wesley Matthews' putback against Oklahoma City. And I want you guys, if you have not heard this yet, those listening, to just kind of hear what the chaos is, not the right, it's controlled chaos is probably how you describe it. But let's play what this sounded like in the truck. This is, you are hearing the voices of Jamie Burns, who is our director, vice president of broadcasting, who's in this video, and then producer Max Linewand.
Stay wide. Stay wide. Ready two.
Red, you're
two.
First.
Ready four.
Why,
take
you're
four.
Next.
Ready
Randy,
five.
Get that for me.
Ready
on
five.
B.
Take five.
Red. Then why?
Ready one. Take
B.
One.
B.
Ready three.
Then A.
Ready two. Take two. Ready five. Take five. Ready six. Take six.
Yeah.
West.
Red.
Ready white to red.
Red is first.
White to red. Nice job.
Why is that?
Yes. Yeah, my why.
Right to the reaction.
Ring roll wide is off.
Little reaction here.
Ring roll wide is off.
So let's go back right there. Your role, and I think if for those who haven't seen the video, Fox Sports Indiana has tweeted, if the visuals I think are a little bit important to this as well, because you can see all the TVs and you can see you guys sitting next to each other. One of the most amazing things in this business when I was growing up, when I was in high school and I was shadowing Denari, and I sat with him for a half, and then I went in the truck for a half, and I spent the whole time on the car ride home talking about the truck, and that was wanting to be a play-by-play guy. But can you take us through, let's start with that moment. What's going on? What are you yelling? What is Jamie shouting, and how are you guys not crossing wires when all that controlled chaos is happening?
So I'm going to take you to before that moment. We know we're in a buzzer beater situation, so you know, it's my responsibility to make sure Jamie knows that, which he does, but just letting him know, all right, Pacers are going to have a buzzer beater situation after this free throw or after this timeout, which means he's setting up his camera shots. We always want to have at least two cameras that can see the clock. That way, if it is a true buzzer beater, we've got at least two looks where we know the ball left his hand, the ball didn't leave his hand before that red light goes on. Then beyond that, we're setting up our ISOs. What else are we shooting? We've got our game coverage down. So then we want to make sure we've got the Pacers bench. Then we want to make sure we've got something from Oklahoma City. You've got thrill of victory, agony of defeat, and then anything else that we might be able to cover. We got lucky in that situation because of the Darren Collison reaction. That was the real money shot. We had great stuff on Wesley Matthews. We had the shots covered as well as we possibly could have. But Darren Collison just turning right into our right handheld camera with that scream, which I think was the real most memorable shot of that, was made that just what I thought. That took that from a good replay sequence to one that was memorable for me.
What's fascinating to me about live TV or even live radio, but I think it certainly applies to live TV in this instance, is it's a lot like being on the floor in a way, because you get one moment. You get that. If you're the Pacers, like, you got that play to try to win the game. And from a TV perspective, a live TV perspective, this isn't edited. This is, you get that shot and you're on that camera and you're ready for these 10, 15 money seconds. And if you aren't, then the product isn't as good. You have the wrong shot. You don't have that memorable moment. And maybe somebody at home might not notice if you guys weren't necessarily on top of your game, but I think they absolutely do notice when they see the Darren Collison shot and they see some of these takeaways right after the basket itself. I think whether it's you know, top of mind, whether they're realizing that there's people taking those shots at the right time, or whether it's just it adds to the emotion, the excitement of the moment, there sort of is a, you get one shot and you get very little time to get that shot correct too.
And we pride ourselves in our preparation. So going back to your original question of, you know, what's going on in the truck at that moment, you know, Jamie is the director, is calling the cameras, the live shots, and as it happens, I'm setting up the replay sequence. So Jamie and I, before that clip you know, started recording, he's telling me, all right, I'm gonna have camera five on the backside, so that'll have the clock. I'm going to have camera six on backside, so that'll have the clock. I'm going to have this camera on, you know, camera three on the Pacers bench. Camera four will be on the Thunder bench or whatever it may be. And that way, all of those cameras are running into tape machines. So while Jamie's calling out numbers, ready three, take three, ready six, take six, I'm setting up my replay sequence, which are going to be letters and colors. So I know, okay, my backside machine is usually into my green machine, not to get too technical. Okay, I know that my first look is probably going to be green, because you're going to want to see that clock that's also going to be wide enough where you're probably going to be able to see how the play developed. Because it's not just, you know, one of the things that I was taught at a young age producing basketball, it's not necessarily what happened that's the most interesting thing. It's what led to what happened that's the most interesting thing on a replay.
And then I would say what happens after something significant happens. And I'd like to ask a question about the most recent Pacers game, where you had a reaction shot from Wesley Matthews sort of diving off the bench almost like Superman. And in that situation, it wasn't a game-winning shot or a buzzer beater. How often do you have the camera? I'd like to know this, because sometimes I see things on the bench and I give you a heads up saying, you know, Miles Turner is waving his towel, or Darren Collison is chewing out an official. And I don't know if you see it, because I don't know what all cameras you have on the bench at the time, but to have that one shot of Wesley Matthews sort of diving onto the floor as a reaction shot was memorable. It's already being shared as GIFs on Twitter. What happened at that point, and how often do you have those shots?
Let me go back and first say thank you for pronouncing it GIF. It's one of the large fights my wife and I have. She says GIF, and just it's very, very frustrating. So you know, in a bigger show, like when you're watching the NCAA tournament, when you're watching the Final Four next week, you know, they're gonna have more cameras than they know what to do with. So they're always going to have that bench shot. They're always going to have that great reaction shot. On the regional level, which we are, we're not going to have as many cameras, as many tools as they necessarily do. Thankfully, we've got a great crew who works with us for most of these games. And it's not necessarily Jamie saying to those guys, swing over and get bench reaction. They just kind of know, oh, wow, that's a big moment. That's a fun moment. I'm going to swing over and get bench reaction, especially because that's, again, getting a little technical. That's a backside handheld. They probably won't have the best reaction, so they can get something else at that point. And the bench was just going nuts. So our camera person at that point, which was a guy named Brian Wirtz, just kind of knew to swing over and get that shot, and it made it really nice.
We didn't ask for questions on Twitter. I think if we did, though, this would be near the top. What is it like working with Chris Denary, Quinn Buckner, and while Jeremiah's pre- and post-game show are with Ken Sothman, who is the producer for the pre- and post, he's in the room, so you can answer this awkwardly.
JJ's great.
What's it like working with that crew and maybe some of the specifics of, you know, you guys spend, this is probably accurate, more time together than you do with your families during the season?
Most importantly, I've got all the Connecticut water I can drink.
You're playing up to our Reddit fan base.
Oh, I'm well aware.
They're going to love that answer.
Again, I'm lucky because I know there are crews that don't get along as well as we do, or there are crews where, you know, guys don't.
We get along?
Well, you know, 82 games, we get along for about 60 of them, let's say. But, you know, everyone on this crew puts in the work. You know, I'll see Quinn in the gym sometimes in the morning, and he's on the treadmill, and he's watching the previous game, or he's watching our next opponent's game. And, you know, you've all seen Chris's copious amounts of notes. And, you know, JJ gives me a nice sheet every day of, okay, these are potential sideline hits, and we're always ready to blow those off just because of, you know, what happens in the game is the most important. But we've got, you know, a really good cohesive unit. You know, Quinn's knowledge of basketball, and Quinn won't listen to this, so it's clear that I'm not just kissing up to him. Quinn's knowledge of basketball is just so incredible. You know, I've likened him to, you know the movie Minority Report? Quinn's a precog. He sees things before they happen, which is pretty incredible sometimes. He knows what's going to happen on the court as it's happening or before it's happening, and that's pretty fun.
Let's go current events now. And last night, Monday
night. Mueller Report? No?
No, we're going to stay away from politics or news, but it is a sports hot topic, and it's really an injury that happened last night in the Portland-Brooklyn game. Yusuf Nurkic goes down with a Paul George-like injury, and I'm curious the producer's perspective because this was an unusual broadcast that I happened to be half-watching. I had the television on. I was laying in bed. It was, you know, well after midnight, but I wasn't watching at the time. And then I just heard Matt Weiner, who was, unfortunately, I think from his perspective, calling the game from a studio because it was one of those players-only broadcasts.
Players only, baby.
Even though he wasn't a player, so maybe it wasn't even branded that way, but it was a remote call. He said, we will not be showing that again, before he even gave the producer the opportunity to make the decision. And they did not show it again on NBA TV. I'm not 100% certain what the local broadcast did in that situation. You were on the air. You were obviously calling the shots with the Victor Oladipo injury, which I do think personally is a little different than the Nurkic injury. But what is the mindset of a producer? What is the protocol? What have you learned? And how would you have handled last night's situation?
So this has been gone over ad nauseum in Fox basketball seminars, Fox baseball seminars. You have to be ready for these things to happen because obviously they are going to happen. Unfortunately, you know, one happened to us this year, you know, one happened to Portland last night. And, you know, the immediate thing, until you know what's going on, stay wide. Just in case the injury is catastrophic and very gruesome, you know, you've got to remember that the player's family might be watching what you're showing as well. So you want to stay wide. At that point, you know, I'll go back to my situation when Victor got hurt. When it happened, you know, our first signal that it was bad was when a trainer put a towel over his leg. That's okay. This is not going to be a good injury. So we've got, you know, our replay operators in our tape room. I'm telling them, cue it up. Let's find our best looks. I do think, as the documentarian of Pacers basketball, or last night the Trailblazers broadcast as the documentarian of Blazers basketball, we do have a responsibility to show it at least once. But beyond that, I think it could just get grotesque and maudlin. But I do think, you know, the most important thing, you've got to stay calm in those situations. You can't freak out no matter how gross the injury is. You want to make sure the player's okay. My general rule when someone is injured, you know, we make sure they're okay, and then we show whatever replays we deem appropriate. And I think with Oladipo, one of the things that we did that was important was to show some of the reactions, one of how, you know, disappointed his teammates were, but two, when Vic was being wheeled off, him waving to the crowd saying that he's okay.
What seemingly makes this so challenging to me is you can't really black and white write a rule about it because, for example, while Oladipo's injury may end up being as long-term and as catastrophic as this injury to Nurkic, visibly, you know, you saw those moments, the towel goes on, the other trainers come out, you see the player's reaction, but even if you go back and watch it today, you need to look with a close eye to figure out when exactly the injury happened. The Nurkic injury is about as gruesome as it gets. I might even argue it's worse than Paul George. I mean, it is gruesome. And so you've got these two season-ending injuries. You've got similar aftermaths in that trainers are running out, the players are looking away. But to me, it's apples and oranges in terms of what it's like to watch. Like, I was about asleep, and I didn't see it. And, in fact, it was Jeremiah's text when I was half asleep that made me go look this up. And then I was wide awake, and I think I was awake for, like, another 2 hours because it was so gruesome. It's apples and oranges to me, the two injuries. And then how to show it, how to cover it. It's not black and white.
I completely agree. And very little in television is when you're doing live television. And that's hopefully going to, you know, save my career when we're all, you know, replaced by sideline reporting robots and play-by-play robots. There's no there's no algorithm to tell you exactly what to do. There are I wouldn't call them rules. There are guidelines, you know, and this isn't necessarily for injuries, but the human eye, and you learn this through experience, you learn this through talking with, you know, mentors, other producers, but, you know, you want to go wide to tight generally on a replay. You show it wide, then you show it tight. You want to save your super slow motion shot. If you're going to go, you know, a multiple replay sequence, you want to save your super slow-mo for later. Going, you know, super slow-mo to real speed can be jarring to the eye, I believe. So there are no hard and fast rules, whether it be covering an injury, whether it be covering anything. You just have to, you know, trust your instinct. And the biggest thing is being prepared for those situations. We've like I mentioned, we've talked about them time and time and time again about what is the right way to cover these. You know, the most time I've ever spent on conference calls is when the Pacers were in Sacramento last year, when it was while there were protests going on in Sacramento. And I think we covered that as well as we possibly could have, and that's mostly because we prepared to cover that, and we spent the time to discuss all of the possible permutations of what could go on, and that way we're not panicking when something strange happens.
All right, this is a little bit of a downer. Let's end this conversation on a positive note and kind of get Max, get you to look ahead to these final eight games. And, you know, the NBA finals are the ultimate, the conference finals, but for the local broadcast, we only have, if you're listening and are not aware, we have the ability to broadcast some first-round playoff games depending upon the national broadcast outlet. And so those are the biggest. Those are the ultimate from our perspective. But this push to the playoffs, it's pretty important as well, and it's time for everyone to kind of ramp their game up a little bit. With eight games to go, a two-game lead on the Boston Celtics, what are you looking forward to doing with the broadcast over these final eight games? What stories do you want to tell?
You know, we're lucky because all you can hope for as a producer is you've got something to play for in the last, you know, couple of weeks. And we certainly have a lot to play for and a lot to cover. You know, these two Celtics games are, we thought at the beginning of the year, oh, you know, playing the Celtics twice in a week, this could be fun. But no one knew that it's basically going to be a playoff preview. You know, there's I read something this morning where it's, you know, the Pacers and Celtics both have a plus 98% chance of finishing in the four or the five. So, you know, I'll be looking at those games as potential playoff previews, as, you know, familiarity breeds contempt in the NBA. And if you're playing someone in a first-round series and you're also playing that team twice in a week before the playoffs start, there's going to be a whole lot of contempt. You know, we're going to keep building towards the playoffs. We want to get Pacers fans, Fox Sports Indiana viewers excited for the playoffs, and then we just want to go all out once the playoffs begin. You know, it's a high stress time, but it's the most fun time, and we would hope that Pacers fans would want to continue to watch the local broadcast. We are doing a Pacers broadcast for Pacers fans, whereas ESPN, TNT, NBA TV, whomever else may be covering the game, are doing a national-style broadcast.
Support your local businesses applies to TV as well.
It applies to television, applies to sandwich shops, you name it.
We didn't even get – you know what? Maybe we'll grab you, Max, in the off season because, I don't know, maybe we could have a foodie spin off of this, but Max texted me. He goes, are we okay just to talk about sandwiches for 20, 25 minutes today? And I said, maybe we'll talk about –
get into pizza.
Maybe we'll talk about the Pacers being – 8 games left in the season and the playoff hunt, and we'll save sandwiches for another day. But maybe this is a tease to a summer podcast. You are quite the foodie, and you...
I like to use the term gourmand.
Okay, yeah.
Well, I think that if anyone has an outstanding sandwich shop, get a hold of Pat. We could do the summer podcast at the shop.
That's a great idea.
What kind of sandwich is Victor Oladipo? What kind of sandwich was Reggie Miller? We can do that.
I think if you were to try to put a point on where the podcast goes off the rails, it would be what kind of sandwich is Victor Oladipo?
I think he's a Reuben. Why? Well, you have to tune in this summer. It's called
Talk
a deep tease
July.
In the podcast business.
That is a deep tease. Max, in all seriousness, we appreciate you joining us here, and good luck with the broadcast. I know these are kind of like the players. These are, you know, you've got your broadcasts in mid-January where you're on your fourth game in 6 nights, and then you've got the ones where you're preparing for the playoffs and in the playoffs, and I know these have higher stakes and a lot of importance. So good luck, and to everyone listening, I know we certainly say to make sure when you have the option – Fox Sports Indiana would certainly appreciate your viewership.
Look forward to doing this in another 4 years when I get an invite, guys.
All right, certainly a thanks to Max, and we will be with you at some point here next week, and we will have updated scenarios, and the playoff picture I think will be a little bit clearer. But as we stand right now, we're recording this here on a Tuesday afternoon. Any final thoughts for you where the Pacers are right now?
Enjoy the final 2-3 weeks of the regular season, the playoff push. Enjoy watching the standings and catching Celtics and Sixers highlights just to see how they are playing and compare against the Pacers. I think Indiana, you know, I think we had the stat over the last 30 years, only the San Antonio Spurs have been a part of the playoffs more than the Pacers. They clinched that playoff spot over the weekend. So maybe some listening take the playoffs for granted, but don't. Think about the team coming into Bankers Life Fieldhouse on Saturday, the Orlando Magic. The last time they've been in the playoffs was way back when the Pacers eliminated them at the start of the first Paul George run to the Eastern Conference Finals. That seems like such a long time ago. So much has happened, and Orlando has not been a part of the playoffs. So savor the next couple of weeks. Enjoy watching this team. As I mentioned before the interview with Max, continue to support them. Make Bankers Life Fieldhouse that true home court advantage. And one final thought, since Max was here, even though he mentioned it, and Pat, you mentioned it as well, Wednesday night's game, you do have a choice. Make the right choice. Fox Sports Indiana has your coverage. And then we look forward to I think in a couple Wednesdays when the playoff schedule is announced, being able to, you know, have a Fox Sports Indiana broadcast schedule in and around the national television schedule as well. And of course, if you're in the car or you choose to do so, don't forget about that Pacers radio network as well.
Well put. And one final thing, you know what I like is the fact that I've asked, Doug this, I asked Miles this, and I think Corey this. I said, are you watching what's going on over in Boston? Are you watching the scores? And they all said yes. And yeah, obviously, like, we know you're watching them, but I like that they're willing, you know, to say, yeah, we're checking
and
on what's going
on over there.
Many
other teams I've heard say, no, we just worry about ourselves.
Even I remember the Pacers a few years back when they were, you know, trying to catch that 8 spot. They say, no, you're just worried about yourself. Come on. Like, we know you're a fan. Now, not everybody is not every player is a fan
of
the
If you're not paying attention, maybe you don't care.
Right. I like getting that honest answer. All right, he's Jeremiah Johnson. I'm Pat Boylan. And thanks to our guest, Max Linewan, Pacers TV producer. We will join you again in a few days to catch you up on the Pacers playoff picture and where things stand. Again, Fox Sports Indiana when you have the choice. We're on the radio as well, 1070 The Fan, 107.5 FM in Indianapolis. And if you're around Indiana, we have a statewide radio coverage network, and as well as the Pacers app if you are within, I think it's 100 miles of Indianapolis. You can catch the broadcast, the radio broadcast, on the Pacers app, too. And thanks to our guests. I'm Pat Boylan. We'll talk to you next week on the Sideline Guys podcast.